Welcome to the Frank Reactions podcast, where we discuss how you can get great reactions from your staff, your customers, prospects, and the public through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Temma Frank. If you've already heard my blurb about how we've been transitioning from Frank Online Marketing to Frank Reactions, feel free to just skip ahead to about the 2-minute mark. Otherwise, listen on. We've been transitioning gradually from the Frank Online Marketing Show to the Frank Reactions podcast over the last few weeks, but there's a fair amount of overlap because many of the companies that I interviewed on that show were being successful online because of how they were handling customer experience related issues. So I think there's a lot of insight there that listeners to this podcast can also benefit from. What I've decided to do is for the first few episodes, I'm actually going to replay some of the ones from Frank Online Marketing that really deal a fair bit with customer experience related issues. So if you are a longtime listener of the Frank Online Marketing Show and have already heard all those, I would suggest you just skip right ahead to episode 15, which is where we will have totally new, fresh content for you. If you're interested, particularly in the online marketing side of things, I'd also suggest that you go back to the Frank Online Marketing Show and check out those episodes because there's a lot of real value in those as well. So next up is today's interview, and I hope that I'll get some feedback from you about what you think. I'd really be grateful if you would do a review on iTunes. It would be really exciting if we could get listed in their new and noteworthy column. And it would also be gratifying for me just to know that you're out there listening and to hear some of what you have to say about the show, because I am always looking for ways to make it better. Here we go. Today's guest is Stéphane Sigaud, who's the Customer Experience Practice Leader at the global market research firm TNS Americas. Now, Stéphane admits to being a measurement geek. So when he talks about digital making improved customer experience crucial, he argues it from a really largely statistical point of view. He says it has to be. I mean, digital is giving consumers access to more information on which to base their decisions about what to buy, and has also increased the number of competitors. So if consumers used to have 3 choices and they now have 6, by definition, there will be a lower probability of choosing any particular one. In this interview, we talk about a variety of things, including the very important distinction that's often overlooked between customer service and customer experience. They're not the same thing. Why so many companies are still not taking customer experience seriously enough, and how customer experience professionals can make the case for investing in customer experience more effectively. We discuss the challenge of dealing with silos, given that customer experience absolutely must cross silo boundaries if it's going to be effective. We talk about why big data will soon, in his opinion, be a thing of the past. And we talk about the future of customer experience and of competition generally, which is increasingly going to rely on increasing connectivity of data. And Stéphane argues that that will improve life not only for customers, but also for your employees. So enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you briefly at the end.
I am Stéphane Sigaud. From a professional standpoint, I've been in the customer satisfaction, customer loyalty, customer experience research for many, many years, almost 30.
Okay.
And currently, I'm in charge of the customer experience practice at TNS for the Americas, so North and South, Canada, US, Mexico, South America.
So you must do a lot of travel.
I do. Okay. I just flew back last night. It was not far. It was just in New York, but I do.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And TNS is a market research firm, right?
TNS is a market research firm. It's fairly large, about 6,000 people worldwide.
Okay.
We're one of the top 3 research companies in the world.
When you and I were chatting before the interview, you were talking about how the advent of the digital world and the role it's taking is making customer experience more important than ever. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and why that is?
Sure. To me, one of the main reasons why that is because people have access to more information, just as simple as that.
Okay.
And that information can be input that helps them make a decision about a product or a service, such as reviewers' comments and things like that. But it could also be information about competitive offers.
Right.
Right. And that results in people being more fickle, having more choice.
Yes.
That decreases the probability, from a pure mathy standpoint, that decreases the probability that you'll go with one brand in particular.
Right.
If you had three to choose from before, and now you know that there are six out there that you didn't know before, your chances of going with one of the three is divided by as many.
Well, what I find interesting, and I totally agree, although what I find interesting is that Apple has managed to be such a juggernaut. Now, you know, certainly they introduced certain categories, like they pretty much were the ones who introduced smartphones, and I remember eagerly waiting. But what it seems to me is happening is with their last couple of releases, things aren't as good as they used to be because they aren't as far ahead of the pack. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're perhaps going to start feeling some of that impact of increased competition as well?
Totally agree.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier.
Well, you know what? I've switched to an Android.
Good. but I agree, and I think the challenger brands are taking advantage of the digital world to influence consumers.
Right.
And that's beyond traditional advertising, obviously. That still has an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everything that's happening out there in the digital world, whether owned by those companies or user-generated, you know, people commenting to one another on the various networks, that has an influence that will weaken the dominant player's position.
Right.
And it doesn't matter which brand you're talking about, doesn't matter which industry sector, there's just to me, I have a math and physics background, there is a mathematical aspect to this, which is, you know, if you increase the competition, you're going to, and the visibility of the options that people have,
right,
the chances of any one of those options to be picked is decreased. It's as simple as that.
Right.
And therefore, the people who manage those companies have to do as best they can to capture the attention of their potential consumers and their existing consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And because competing on product is more and more difficult, because competing on price is never a good idea.
No.
Competing on channel, you know, access, now everything is available on Amazon or, you know, anywhere else.
Yeah.
So the only place where you can keep competing, and where, which is, to me, it's the next or the current competitive battlefield, is customer experience.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think it is, and maybe I know that you're more about the metrics, and we will definitely talk a lot about that, but I keep wondering why it is that what seems so obvious to people like you and me doesn't seem to be penetrating, or even if companies are saying, yes, we recognize we got to get better on service, so many of them, most of them aren't really managing to do so. Even those that have had big service initiatives. I used to work in the banking industry, and I know they care. They want to deliver better service, but it seems almost impossible to transform large organizations so they really do. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's part corporate laziness.
Okay.
And partly the inability of the people in those customer experience, customer service roles to convince their executives of their value and the return on investment that they should make in those areas.
And why do you think that's so hard a case to make?
Because most of today's executives are trained, and you know, to think about numbers first, and customer experience is still perceived as fairly fuzzy to a lot of people. And that, again, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Right? It shouldn't be. It, for people like you and me, it's easy to put an ROI, to put a number around it, and to show, you know, the risk you're taking if you're not improving your experience, and, and so on and so forth. Right.
Yeah.
So making the business case is something that's available now that, you know, the best people know how to do. But I think there are too many people out there who are not good enough to make that case.
Mm-hmm.
don't have the guts, don't have the knowledge, don't have the sometimes the access.
Right.
So to me, it is a corporate culture issue.
I wonder.
And so it'll take time. It will happen, but it'll take time.
I wonder too how much it's a question, certainly with publicly traded companies, that CEOs are so focused on next quarter returns,
yes,
and to get a return from customer service takes longer than 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, that you've got to invest in it.
You've got to invest, right? If you consider it as a cost,
yeah,
you're never going to start.
Right.
Because of those pressures on your quarterly reports.
Right.
If you consider it an investment,
yeah,
you might be able to do it. So I, by the way, which makes me wonder whether there is a way to work on the accounting of those costs. Because if you were able to, you know, amortize them,
mm-hmm,
then they wouldn't have the same impact on your bottom line.
That's an interesting thought. Are there people working on that?
I just thought of this.
Yeah, that's okay, we got to look into that.
The other thing is, at some point, I'd like to discuss with you,
okay,
the difference between customer service and customer experience.
All right,
it's not all about improving customer service.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What is the difference?
And I think the reason why some of those initiatives fail, mm-hmm, or fail to produce the impact that they're planned for is because they're looked at in a siloed manner.
Okay.
To me, customer experience starts with branding efforts.
Yeah.
When a company promotes itself through its branding and advertising efforts, it creates an experience already.
Yep.
That's going to influence the brain of the potential consumers.
Right.
Right? When you walk in the store to make your first purchase, or when you reach out to engage with a company that sells services, that participates in the experience. Mm-hmm. Then you're using the product or the service. That's also part of the experience. Mm-hmm. And customer service only comes as that one slice after that, which is, okay, you have a problem,
right,
you have a question.
Yeah.
That's where customer service comes into play.
Okay.
But it's far from the beginning and it's far from the end, yeah, of that life cycle.
That's an excellent point to make that distinction, because I think you're quite right that it often isn't made. And
there's actually a whole conversation on LinkedIn on that.
Oh, yeah?
Over the past few days.
Ah, I'll have to check. I've been at a wedding. I haven't been looking. Yeah, because that is huge. And yet when I look at search data and what people are searching for, I mean, some of the larger companies are now having chief customer experience officers,
yes,
and stuff. But by and large, people are still looking up customer service, not,
yes,
customer experience.
But that's a maturity issue. I think,
yeah,
people will start understanding that this is a lot more than that.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than that.
Right.
No, go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, because you talked about silos, and that was also something you and I had discussed before. And obviously, I think that is one of the big challenges, because what you're talking about, the customer experience starting with branding, is a marketing issue.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies don't even have marketing and sales on the same page, let alone production and HR and all that. Can you talk a little bit more about the,
sure,
silos and what you see there?
To me, and it's interesting, by the way, because the early days of customer satisfaction,
mm-hmm,
way before the term customer experience was invented, they were born in the quality assurance function of the company at the plant, in the factory.
Yes. Yeah.
This all, you know, Deming and Juran, and,
yep,
guys like that who were engineers and who were looking at delivery consistency of quality.
Mm.
That's really where it all started.
Right.
And then from product, we started looking at customers and then competitors and then advocacy and then opening up to the whole experience with digital.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons why I think it should be looked at cross-functionally.
Right.
Cross-functionally will typically also give you not only more influence over the other areas of the company, but also a higher visibility.
Right. Okay.
Right. The head of customer service is usually reporting to someone who reports into someone who reports into the COO, reports into the CEO.
Yeah.
That's kind of four levels, right, from the top.
Right.
The head of customer experience or chief client officer or someone like that typically is on the executive team.
Right. Okay.
Right? So, and because it is a cultural issue, that level of authority can be an accelerator to the change.
Now, do you think that other senior executives feel threatened by the role that person has?
Threatened, probably not as much as annoyed.
Okay.
Because all of a sudden you have someone who sits at a table and who pokes at you on a regular basis saying, hey, what are you doing there?
Right.
And by the way, I'm going to need some of your data. And I'm also going to give you data, but they're giving you more work.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are short-sighted and in their own siloed mentality are, I guess, annoyed, for lack of a better term. But I don't think threatened because I don't think customer experience replaces anything, right? If you think about the typical functions within a company with your HR, your IT, your production, if there is a manufacturing component, and sales and service and marketing, customer experience cuts through all of those roles. Even if you take it in a linear way, which it's not anymore, but even if you do, you can see how customer experience cuts through and takes input from each and delivers output to each, by the way.
So the role of a chief customer experience officer, really, that person needs a very different skill set from most C-level executives who are very, by nature, are experts in their silo, whereas
absolutely.
The CXO needs to be cross-functional, needs to have great skills at people management, basically, getting...
You have to be good at all of the above, right? Because you have to have a marketing mind.
Yep.
You have to have a strategic mind because... There's no customer experience without a customer experience strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And we see in our business a lot of companies asking us to go measure the quality of the customer experience they deliver.
Right.
We always ask them before anything else, well, what experience do you want to deliver?
Right.
And often we get we're not sure.
Interesting.
So that's a very strategic type of thinking that needs to go in. You need to be also analytical. There's a lot that relies on feedback, and that feedback needs to be analyzed and so on and so forth. And people skills, because you need to work with those other colleagues and influence what they do.
Well, and that's interesting too, because I see this evolving in marketing generally is... Typically, the people who've been attracted to it were not the quant types. I mean, they were the communication skills and the marketing stuff. Whereas now, you really need to understand data and be able to work with data.
Yeah.
Can you comment a little bit about that, about the role of data and how that's influencing things?
Well, I'm biased because in our business, data is
what
where everything starts, right?
Okay.
We actually see... our business, what we call our strategic narrative, around three stages. The first one is data that gives us the right to operate, as we put it. From that data, and we have to have quality data and so on and so forth, that from that data we generate insights. And that gives us the license to compete and to serve clients in a way that is better than what others can do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's all about impact.
Right.
So the whole reason why we need data at the start is that without the data, you can't really produce impact.
And right? you can't know if you've produced impact.
And you can't, exactly, you cannot monitor whether it's making a difference.
Right.
But with most executives today, if you don't come in with data, they're not going to listen to you.
Right.
Right. So you get credibility also thanks to data.
So what sort of data would you look for at the start of an engagement?
So we look at typical customer satisfaction survey data, but more and more we also look at social media type data. You know, what are people saying out there?
Right.
And we tend to marry the two whenever we can.
All right.
Because the survey data will tell you what people are doing and how they're feeling and how they're perceiving a given company or service, but not necessarily why.
Right.
The social data helps understand why people say what they say and why they behave in certain ways.
Right. Also, I think with the survey data, you're probably getting people who have more extreme positions, although I suppose in social media too.
Less and less, yeah.
Really?
Less and less. Okay. We've sort of figured out how to minimize those biases.
That, how do you do that?
Actually, by using very sophisticated data analysis techniques that can remove the extremes and augment, if you will, the validity of the data itself.
So let's talk a bit more about the whole big data thing. I mean, companies, especially large companies, have huge piles of data that often aren't connected. To what extent do you use any of that data in building the picture of what you're looking for?
I'm not sure big data is going to be around that much longer. I mean, if you actually do a search and look at the counts, you know, 5 years ago, it was way up compared to what it is today. I think people have now realized that we've always had a lot of data. Mm-hmm. We have more, and it's coming faster.
Yep.
But that's it. There's no reason to be afraid of it or to be so impressed by it. So I don't think that's changed what everybody is doing much, except for accelerating the way that we can leverage that data that we have available to ourselves.
Right.
Some of the changes that we've made, both on the agency side and on the client side, is having more analytical resources and leverage technology in a way that enables us to integrate.
That's what I was thinking, to connect the databases.
But that's, it's not that big a change.
Okay. To what extent do you think, I mean, I've had conversations with big data proponents who keep talking about how it's almost like magically they can come up with something totally new from looking at this data. And I wonder to what extent that's actually accurate.
I think there's always been that possibility if you knew where to look and how to look.
Okay.
Because there were always, I mean, there's been for a long time a number of sources of data available, right? Mm-hmm. With the advent of CRM, so back 20 plus years ago, you looked at essentially behavior data alongside what we call intentional data, right? That's what we're doing today, right? We're continuing to look at CRM and surveys, and we're adding in that mix financial data and social data. Mm-hmm. So we do more and more of that because there is more and more available, and we have better and better engines that we didn't have before.
Are you finding that the information you get from social media data, is that a more accurate predictor of actual behavior?
It's interesting that you've asked. We actually have our own R&D initiative on that. Okay. And we've been able to prove it for a small number of very large consumer brands.
Okay.
So if you look at the big colas or the big detergents out there,
right.
There is so much data available that we have actually tested it and proved it. So we've been able to predict. Hmm. So far we've done it backwards.
Right.
Right. We haven't done it.
Because you're testing the idea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we've been able to predict the results of tracking studies.
Okay.
From looking at social data.
That's interesting.
So we have large agreements with Twitter and Google and other companies of that magnitude, if you will, to work on that.
I mean, that's interesting because you wouldn't think people are talking enough about their consumer packaged goods or... but I guess they do.
That baffles me too. But it does work.
Okay.
It does work, which brings an interesting opportunity but a challenge as well for the research industry. Because if you don't have to do surveys anymore to find out what people are going to do, what are you going to do then?
Right.
But that's what makes us innovate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and I think...
But it works only for the very large brands.
Yeah, yeah. So What other particular types of data do you find are most predictive or most useful in terms of determining how people will actually behave?
It is really, that source is, okay. is really the, I think, the best chance we have
okay.
at predicting behavior.
Are
because
there...
people are really saying out there, you know, I'll never buy it again, or you should mm-hmm. go buy this,
yeah.
Which is usually a good proxy for I bought it and I love it and I'm going to keep buying it.
Right. Okay.
Right. So other than that, I mean, you still have your sales data of what, you know, what particular people, especially with loyalty programs, you can know very specifically what an individual has bought, when, what frequency they buy, and mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always been around.
Right. For companies that aren't the huge CPG companies or the Coca-Colas, what are the most crucial things that they should be looking at or getting in place, do you think?
Well, if we continue to link this to customer experience,
yes,
those companies that will want to win that on that competitive battlefield will need to, in my opinion, one, have a deliberate strategy on what's the experience that they want to
yeah.
deliver. That's, by the way, that's a brand strategy.
Yes.
It's just taking a certain angle, if you will, a certain lens to your brand strategy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not about data. But they should measure whether that promise is being delivered.
Right.
And that's your customer satisfaction surveys,
right.
just simply put.
Yeah.
You know, customer satisfaction surveys are a lot more sophisticated now than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's essentially what companies need to do, bringing into that social media, because
yes.
that helps you understand the data that you're collecting from your surveys.
Right.
And if you can, it's not a must, but if you can integrate with your CRM data, mm-hmm. you'll better understand what segments of customers, you know, the ways segments of customers are behaving.
Right.
So that's getting more granularity
yes.
over what you're doing. And your financial data to measure the impact of the changes that you put in place to improve the experience.
Right.
So if you put those pieces together, you have a framework that's all around customer insights, if you will, that will deliver better performance.
Well, and also to a certain extent, going back to the whole, as you said, initially it started with process and quality management at the production level. Now a lot more and more of the world is focused on services than products, but still having production measurements, I think, is also pretty important. To
yes. I'm glad you brought this up because operational data is
yeah.
very important as well.
Right.
And more we see the type of customer surveys not bifurcating, but sort of evolving from, you know, the good old satisfaction surveys that you would get once a year that would ask you very high-level questions
mm-hmm.
to very in-the-moment
yeah.
surveys that you can get on your mobile
yeah.
Because you just walked out of a Starbucks or checked out of a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be matched to operational data, right?
Right.
It's now companies have the ability to match yours. You just placed a call to customer service with your cable operator.
Yep.
We can match your survey to
yeah.
how long you stayed on the phone,
ah,
how long you waited.
Good point.
So, and that enables you to tweak your operational measures. So
right.
you brought up a good point with that operational data is very important
yeah.
To drive performance because, and not just to drive the experience, but also to drive the company performance. Keep in mind that this is all to improve performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, if you look at the data the right way, you can identify thresholds over which you don't need to improve service anymore because
mm-hmm.
the return on that investment is decreasing.
Right.
Right. And you can find the ideal length of time to respond, the ideal ranges, if you will, on all
right.
those operational measures
right.
that will optimize, not maximize the experience. because they'll also deliver, you know, reduction in cost or optimization of your cost side. Because we're, you know, nobody's doing this just to please the customer. Even Apple.
Right. Oh, definitely.
Right. There's a reason why they're the, you know, biggest company in the world. From a valuation standpoint, it's all to drive returns.
Of course.
So that operational aspect is very important because it enables you to optimize your operations.
So I wonder how long you have to have been doing something before you have enough information to be able to optimize.
Not that long. I mean, if you have, at the operational level, if you have a couple of quarters of data,
really,
should be enough.
Okay.
If you look at a more strategic level, a couple of years.
Right.
But you will start seeing the return on your system.
Yes.
Within a few quarters.
Okay. Now, one of the things that companies struggle with a lot, I mean, you've talked about CRM systems, and of course, that was one of the biggest disappointments to a lot of people. We thought CRM systems were going to change the world, and they've proven to be very difficult to implement well and use well. And I think there's a lot of fear that we're doing the same kind of things now, and we're getting all excited about the potential to link things.
I guess I'm a little more optimistic. I think CRM systems were created to be static.
Okay.
I think what we're looking at right now is much more dynamic in its in the way in the way it's been conceived, right? We're talking about connecting data a lot rather than just store it.
Right.
CRM, the main goal was storing. You know, wouldn't it be great if we could store all the information about this particular customer in one place, so that when customer service gets a call, they can see right away, you know, what they've bought, where they live, blah, blah, blah. That was storage and and access, but in a vertical way.
Okay.
What we're talking about now is much more connected horizontally.
Okay.
With so opening, not necessarily opening the silos, but connecting the silos of all those data silos, if you will.
What do you think about privacy concerns? I mean, you come from Europe, and that's been a huge issue there. Do you think that privacy concerns are going to end up restraining what we can do in terms of data analysis?
I think if we communicate well, I think if we're authentic in our, and we say our, you know, from the business side, authentic in our intentions, and we communicate them honestly and openly, I think we'll be fine.
Okay.
But it's like with everything else. You create something, you invent something with a good intention, and somebody figures out how to misuse it.
Right.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
So all those, you know, credit card
breaches,
security breaches. That's scary.
Yeah.
But that's not from managing customer experience. It's the credit card. It's the payment system.
Yeah.
So I think those payment breaches will have an impact. But I think between the efforts of the regulators and those large companies, I mean, all the players in that field, that's going to be fixed.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because, of course, there is an upside to the consumer. I mean, I let Google track a lot of what I do because if I'm going to get ads fed at me anyway, I'd rather get relevant ads than irrelevant ads.
Exactly.
But I know my husband feels the other way, right?
And you like having a GPS
turned
on your phone because you like finding where you are when you're lost.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's a give and take.
Yeah.
And I think as long as it's above board, I think, you know, I think we'll be fine.
Okay. So where do you see this field evolving over the next few years? What do you think is on the horizon?
More and more connectivity, which makes me very hopeful, because I think the more holistically we look at that picture, if you will, the better it'll become.
Okay.
More relevant to each and every one person, the more beneficial to each and every company that will engage in that kind of strategy.
Okay.
And I think it will mean growth for people as well, because we'll open those silos, we will learn to work with more people. And I'm taking the provider's viewpoint here. I'm not taking the consumer's viewpoint.
Right.
But if you take the consumer's viewpoint, hopefully we'll get better service and better experiences from many more brands.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll, you know, we'll benefit from the fact they're competing,
mm-hmm.
and that they're using the customer experience field as a way to improve, because we'll automatically benefit from that. So I think those that can't compete will disappear.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are disappointing us today.
Right.
Several years ago, I was asked to teach a university course in marketing research. And I was absolutely shocked to hear that most students hated the marketing research course. They saw it as a bunch of boring number crunching. Now, I've got to admit, I don't crunch numbers for fun, but I've always found the insights that you can get from analyzing marketing data to be really, really exciting. Increasingly, it's a skill that marketers will need to have. And I really hope that universities are changing their curricula and also how they teach marketing research to reflect that reality. But it's really also important that we remember that the numbers are there to support a goal. Part of that goal is convincing your senior executives that customer experience is an investment and not just a cost or an expense. Part of it is also convincing your colleagues that every department stands to benefit from greater sharing of the numbers. Let's face it, customer experience will be essential in the coming years. Bad customer experience can't hide anymore. And increasingly, customers don't have to and won't take it anymore. That's all for this week. If you've enjoyed today's episode or this podcast generally, please do share. And I'd be really grateful if you'd head over to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a positive review. It'll really help for others to find out about the podcast and learn the great things that our guests are sharing. You may also want to head over to frankreactions.com. We're giving away a free ebook on ways to improve your online customer experience through better usability. You can always reach me by email, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com. You can always leave me a telephone message on our toll-free line, which is 1-866-544-9262. If you'd like to check out the other episodes or the blog, visit frankreactions.com, and you can always subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also, of course, find me on Twitter at Tema Frank and all the other basic social media places. I look forward to chatting with you again in 2 weeks.